Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Springzeal Daniel, a powerhouse in the BPO and virtual solutions industry. With over 17 years of experience, she's the president and co-founder of OceanClick Virtual Solutions, leading a team delivering world-class outsourcing services. Her background in mass communication, marketing, and multimedia gives her a unique edge in business and leadership. She's worked across industries from copy editing scientific journals to managing real estate marketing. A serial entrepreneur, she's launched multiple businesses, including a region-wide auto company. Passionate about Filipino excellence, her mission is to elevate virtual assistants to a global standard. And I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and insights into the future of outsourcing work. So, Springzeal, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm good. And thank you for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here and talk a little bit about what I do and hopefully inspire people.
Yeah, I think you have a lot to share. And before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of maybe what you're doing now and things into the future, how did you even get started? You're a serial entrepreneur. Does this mean you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Is this like a generational career path and you're just carrying the torch that your parents handed you?
I wish that was the case, but I could say that I do come from a family that they're quite entrepreneurial. Not my dad, though. My dad was a pastor, so it skipped a generation. He was a minister. But my grandfather, he was also a minister, but he did have a lot of businesses. And in fact, my family in Cebu City, they are running their own institution, school. And I've heard from them, from aunts, uncles, that long before we did have some relatives, like all the way in Cagayan, in Mindanao. And also very entrepreneurial. But since I'm the only one now here in Dumaguete City, so I've been away from that side of my family, I'm the only one who's really doing this business. So it's, I guess there's this genetics there that I didn't pursue business management or entrepreneurship. I pursued mass communication, and yet here I am running several businesses.
And so how did you get started? Were you cutting lawns as a kid? Did you make and sell Tahoe? How did you even get started in your business career?
Yeah, I could remember when I was a kid, I used to buy some, just a few candies and this nuts and chips from the local sari store, like that small stores. And then I would sell it to my classmates in school because our canteen didn't have this. So I was like, okay. And then I didn't know any concept about entrepreneurship, but I was like, okay, I have to save money so that, or I have to have this rolling capital. I didn't know that term.
Like 5 years old and you're calculating your runway. You're like, I've got this many weeks of snacks.
I was probably like 7 or 8 during that time. And so I have to make sure that I have enough money to, and my parents didn't even know. So I like kept those gifts hidden under my bed and just making sure that I have enough to supply my classmates, because I don't think the teachers would have agreed that a student to be selling in school. So I did that. But then in high school, I like also had that wherein I was just like creating this newspaper, weekly newspaper for my class, and just updates on what's been going on in school and some comments and some people sending in their letters, love letters, asking for advice. And we have someone
That's great.
And like organize that. And then eventually people started buying that newspaper. They were subscribing to it. I think I was in second year high school then, or let's say that's grade 8. And then even the other sections and the other grade levels were also starting to purchase. So I had to produce more and more of that copy, and I had to do it weekly. And so suddenly it became like a whole business. So those are just some of
what? So in high school, you had a newspaper business?
Yep. So I was like, okay, wow. I'm going to pursue mass communication.
And that led you to mass communications.
Yeah, but
Is
that
there a
it was
business in the middle, or that it was that was the progression?
not really it me taking up mass communication was actually a bet. When I took up the because the school did provide like an exam as to what you're good at, and so they can
Like
advise
an
you
aptitude test. Yeah.
as an aptitude test that you can choose based on that what course you can take. And it seemed like I was good in engineering, but my mom was like, why don't you take mass communication? And we were playing this game, Word Factory.
Okay.
You know what they're it's
No.
like cubes of letters and you shake it and then for a few minutes you have a timer and then you're going to form words out
Okay.
of those letters in there. And so we had a bet. So my course was actually okay, the newspaper business was just part of it, but then ultimately my mom and I, we had a bet based on that game, and she said, if I win, you take mass communication, and then if you win, you can take whatever course you want. And so, okay, I'm gonna take that bet. But then I won, she lost, and then my mom's very smart. And then she was like, oh, I lost. You're really good at words. So mass
Yeah.
communication. So, okay, I'm gonna take mass communication. So quite manipulative there.
Wow. Smart
But
mom. Go mom. Props to
yeah.
mom if you ever hear this. That's
Yeah.
excellent. So you took mass communication and then any businesses while you were going through the program or right after university? How did you walk us
Yeah,
through?
right after that, I didn't have my first business until I was 24. So yeah, after school, of course, I tried working for some companies, like, because they were really hiring. So I was like, okay, let me try it out. But then by 24, there was just an opportunity that, you know, came, and I just wanted it to be a very small business because it would be my first business, a small food stand at a corner, because there was this place that was available and they had this sign that said spaces for rent. So it's okay, I'm gonna take one space and just that at the side. And then the business owner was, or the property owner was like, why don't you just rent the whole place and run the whole thing, because I don't have the energy to run it. And I thought, you know what, this is an opportunity, why not grab it? And I had the funds to do it. And at that time, it was still very cheap because that was like years and years ago. And so it's like, okay, let's give it a try. And then I realized that I really enjoyed doing business. And of course, I had zero knowledge, zero background, zero everything. But I was able to run that business for a year with zero running capital. I couldn't even imagine how I survived that phase, because of course I had employees that I need to pay, and then the stocks need to be restocked, everything. So I got a little bit of help inheritance wise from my mom, but it was not that big. In dollars, let's say, it's about 2000-ish.
Yeah, that's not a lot.
It's not a lot, but it was
It
enough.
got you kick-started.
Yeah, but then of course it's in the Philippines, so that could go a long way. And so yeah, that's where I started. But then I realized so many things running that. It was a bar, it was a resto bar, and so there were a lot of moving parts. The food, so the inventory, the stocks, and then of course the staff. And so I was everything. I was HR manager, I was the purchaser, I was the waiter, I was the cashier. I did everything.
Yep,
So
captain dishwasher, toilet cleaner, and customer service rep, accountant, marketing and sales department, legal, human resources. You have 42 hats on.
yes. And luckily, because mass communication did help in terms of marketing, in terms of getting people, in terms of organizing events and just connecting with people. And then there were regulars started coming in. So that did help. And I know because I've heard some rumors, like from other business owners who've been there in that industry for quite a while, and they did visit my bar, and they
Yeah.
were. Yeah, and I heard that they were like saying, oh, she's just gonna last 6 months. or
Yeah,
something.
no. I had a mentor once tell me good marketing can sell a non-existent product, but bad marketing can't give away free gold. And that's a really important thing. And in today's transparent world, what really matters, of course, is delivering on your promises because it's so transparent with reviews and social media. The days of being a snake oil salesman and that are numbered. There's 101 examples of people that were getting away with stuff before, but now because things are so transparent,
They
the
can,
customers found out the emperor has no clothes type thing. And so ultimately, you really have to do good business. You have to focus on being excellent. And there's a whole, if a tree falls in the wood and no one's there, it doesn't make a sound. If you have the world's greatest product or service and no one knows about it, are you going to help anybody and make any money? So it's a catch 22. There are some very famous people that have been anti-marketing. Greg Glassman of CrossFit was one. Elon Musk talks about not eating it, but he does massive press release events, and that is a form of marketing. And so it's just an inescapable part of it. There's just different ways of marketing, I think.
Yes, and it was the time when Facebook started. So you can imagine how long ago it was. Being of that generation, I did leverage Facebook events, announce the events, and it was a time where you don't have paid ads. So it was just announcements there and just organizing things there, posting there. But when we did the grand opening, it was packed. It full, and that was a problem, a good problem,
But you weren't
but
ready for that many people.
I was not ready. I was definitely not ready, and so I noticed some customers were waiting for quite a while for their food to be served or just to be entertained, and I didn't have enough people to, and I didn't have enough chairs or tables. So,
Champagne problems.
I learned a lot of lesson during that time. And I thought of it like ultimately I had to close, right? Because I couldn't sustain it. I could have tried, but then it was a problem because I didn't do any feasibility study, and I didn't realize that the area behind the property was residential. So I couldn't really do a lot of events because they would complain.
Oh, noise.
Of the noise. So I couldn't organize like bands playing. And these events are what brings in the crowd. But
Right.
since I can't do that because they would be complaining, they called the police. They even complained in the radio. And some of my staff were like, hey, we heard your name in the radio complaining about the noise, this and that. So this would have been something that I could have prepared for or realized about that area if I was a business student or if
Right.
we even did like a feasibility study to begin with.
Although, to be honest, you could have missed it. I see how that could be something that would, but I get what you're saying. It could have caught it. It could have been missed. Yeah, it's it it okay. All right, so then what?
So I had to close it because I couldn't sustain it because I couldn't organize the events
Vince, yeah, right.
anymore. Of course, sales went down. There were still, but then in order to be able for the rent, the staff, and everything, I needed those events. Because for a bar, it's Fridays and Saturdays.
Right. So what did you do after that?
So I just closed it. And a good thing that I still had my work because I didn't let go of my work. I did continue working. But the thing with my work, I was already doing online work. So I started with as a teacher because mass communications, I was teaching English to Japanese students.
That's a
And
good market.
not just the Japanese students, but these are students that are business people. So I was teaching business English. And so some of them were CEOs of companies in Japan that I was teaching. And I control my own time. So I was able to do that. My salary was based on the number of hours that I work. If I worked a lot of hours, then I get more. If I don't work for that week, then of course it was like no work, no pay, right? Job security. But the most valuable thing for me was my time. The time that I could control my own time, that I could plan my own time so I can do the things that I want to do and I can be at places that I want to be. And so I continued doing that and I continued working. online until such time that I transitioned into working online for real estate in the US. With that, I was working online for quite a long time. Then pandemic, yeah.
COVID.
And when COVID happened, a lot of my clients recommended me to some of their contacts as well, because everything became online, everything became virtual. So I had more than I could
Yeah,
manage.
it was the only way, it was the only way to do business. You weren't
Yeah,
allowed to leave your house.
exactly. So I had to add team members if I was there was a demand. So I had to provide, I had to supply. So there was really, it was the supply and demand. But fortunately at that time, as well, fortunately for me, we also had an investor who looked into it, because this investor, his business was in tourism, a resort, diving and all that. And when pandemic hit, that was all shut down, been closed, and they had to let over like 100 of their staff. They did try to not to, but then nobody knew when it was gonna end. Nobody knew how long it was gonna last. And yeah, this investor was also working with my husband. My husband was working in that industry for over 15 years, but he was in marketing. He was the marketing for that place, although he's also a dive instructor, but he was doing more of the management and the marketing side. And so the three of us came up. This industry is,
Taking off.
yeah, it's off. Like even airlines were
Yep, grounded. Yep.
And but this industry was booming. So what should we do? And so we started OceanClick, because the demand for that. And so this investor tried to also invest in that, because he realized that you have to have different industries in your portfolio. You can't just be in one industry, because if this one industry fails, you have to have a backup.
Yep.
So yeah. But before that, my husband and I was also starting a car rental business before this happened. And we were afraid that it was also going to affect our car rental business.
Right.
Yeah, but it didn't actually.
COVID. COVID
Yeah.
didn't. Because you could drive places, you just couldn't stop anywhere.
You couldn't stop there, and you couldn't ride the public transportation. So you need
It was
something
good.
private.
Yeah,
So
so it was
we rent
good.
a car. Yeah. So that time we thought, okay, it's going to be bad, but no, it didn't. So in fact, it helped,
Was
it
good.
boosted our business. So we had to add more units. So we started with just three cars, and then we added more cars to that. And now we have like over 15 units and motorcycles and big bikes.
Wow. Congratulations. That's a
Thank
very exciting.
you.
It's also stress too, but still very exciting.
Yeah, and so that happened before the pandemic. It was like, okay, let's just start with, because you have a car, I have a car, and we don't really use it every day because our office is so near our place. So let's, or
Rent
like
it.
we're at home, so let's rent it out. And then pandemic, COVID happened, and yeah,
Just took off.
it took off. And then we started also the OceanClick business,
Yep.
and it also took off. And so we were then running multiple business, and then just recently we added a few more businesses. So
So, what would you recommend start someone who's starting or maybe struggling right now? Do you have any advice? It's a generic, broad question, but in general, do you have advice to anyone that might be either struggling to get momentum or they're just about to start a business? What would you recommend to them?
there are people who are really business savvy, like they have it, but there's a fear. There's fear in them of starting. I think that's something I didn't have. Fear is a good thing. That's why it's good that I have my partner, I have my husband with me, because he grounds me, because without him, I would have just taken all the opportunity that came my way. It could be a good thing, it could be, but there's a lot of people, they're thinking about it, but they're not really acting on it, right? Sometimes you just have to act. If you've been thinking about it for quite some time, and if the opportunity is there, then why not? I've seen a lot of people, they start with just very small things, selling small things, and then they're able to grow in that. For people struggling to start, my advice is to really just take the leap.
Take a leap. Yeah, they do it.
If you make mistakes, just think of it as something that is like a stepping stone for you to grow and better next time. I failed my first business, and then I just thought of it as me having to spend money instead of a 4-year business class, at least that was crash course.
Instead of a business class, it was a crash course. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way
Yes.
to put it. Yeah, I think that's a great tip. I often always tell people just remember that having a business is almost like a never-ending job hunt because ultimately, even if your business is doing well, you want to grow, you typically still need to get more clients. So that search almost never stops, right? And then, even
Right.
then, when you think about it, all a job is a business with only one product, your time, and only one customer who's your boss, right? Trying to focus more on the problem you're going to solve and then figure out how to just deliver an excellent result that you can train. And custom can be the kiss of death because if everything is custom, it's hard to have standards and scale. If you look at, I can go to McDonald's, I can go to any Jollibee, and I've got the same menu, and that allows them to scale and have chicken farms and to train staff and send staff from this location to that location to help out. But if everybody was trying to do custom things that people wanted, it wouldn't work as well. And so that's a catch-22 because there are people that want custom things and you're going to lose some business that way. But ultimately, if you're trying to grow and scale, you got to be able, it's like the old Ford car manufacturer in the beginning said, any color you want as long as it's black, right? That was the thing. You can have a car in any color you want as long as it's black. You don't, yeah. So I think those are great tips. Take the leap. I think especially the younger you are, the more aggressive into leaping you can be. Once you start having kids and stuff like that, it gets a little harder because other people pay for your mistakes. But that's a
Yeah,
great.
there are people who are very fearful when it, I can tell, like my husband, he's quite hesitant to take the leaps. So when I'm like, let's go, let's do this, he's
Right. That's the
taking
yin yang. That's the yin yang balancing. That's the balancing act.
It is, definitely is. So.
So, with you working across so many different industries and obviously working online, what are some of the trends or things that you're seeing come down the pipeline? Obviously, AI is a big one on the horizon. When it comes to working remote, is it 100% remote or is it hybrid? Can you speak to that a little bit? Because now we're in a new post-COVID era. Most companies recognize they need to have, I know dry cleaners that are trying to build an app. So we really have this new semi-digitized world. At the same time, we've got some bottlenecks, and then there's really disruptive things happening technologically and geopolitically. So when you look into your crystal ball, what are some of the things that you're paying attention to over the next 5, 10 years?
As you've said, AI really, it's going to change a lot of things. And so we're always like listening, studying, and making sure that we're up to date as to what AI is capable of these days. And for sure, there's a lot of things that AI can do right now. And that's why we are now harnessing the power of AI. So we understand how prompt engineering works. And the best way to use it, because ultimately AI is a tool. If you ask AI, even AI is going to say that AI is a tool. For now, we don't know yet what the future holds in 50 years, in 100 years, because of course AI is learning, evolving, and with all the sci-fi movies out there as to what AI is capable of.
Maybe I. You know what? You can go online and look up to speak to that because you brought it up. I think it will always be a tool. And here's why. There's two things to say about that. One is you can look up online the moment, the flash of light at the moment of conception. And there are videos you can see where the recording, when the sperm enters the egg, there is a flash of light. Which I blew my mind when I saw, and I was like, this can't be true. And I looked it up and I saw 4 or 5 videos and I said, oh my goodness, we really do have a spark.
There's that energy, that spark.
There's a real spark. And some scientists go, oh, it's just a release of zinc. Okay, you show me a release of zinc that equals sentient life. I have a spark. I don't know about you, but I got a spark. So until AI has that spark, which also people attribute to a soul, I think it'll always be just a tool. Now, the other side of this is the godfather of quantum computing, David Deutsch, has written a number of books, The Fabric of Reality, and one of the other ones that's really good. It's not an easy read, but it's worth reading, is The Beginning of Infinity. And in it, he makes the case that good science is built on specific explanations with details you cannot vary without changing the outcome. So what that means is that there used to be myths about why there are winter, why there's winter. And the Greeks thought, oh, this princess was kidnapped by Hades and she's stuck with him and the world weeps and it's winter, but she gets home to visit her family. And so it's that's an easy to vary. Well, why isn't it winter in the Philippines? Why isn't it winter along the equator? There's all these easy to vary details that you just explain away. But some things you can't do is, for example, Galileo was not the one that originally said the sun is the center of the universe. It was a different, I forget his name now, but it was somebody else. Galileo was the first one to be able to prove the theory, and he proved it by seeing the phases of Pluto. So just like there's phases of the moon, like we've got a half moon and a crescent moon, there's Pluto phases of Pluto. And the only description is a specific mathematical equation that explains these bodies at this size and this location. You can't change any number without the whole house of cards falling down. And so that's where, so with AI, until we can have a specific explanation for how we create intelligence, we actually don't know if we're just fooling ourselves. Because right now, what LLMs are is they're just statistical probability machines. Statistically, based off this question, this is the most likely answer. Based off of these millions of conversations I've analyzed,
This would be
statistically, this question means this answer. And that's all it is. If you chat with it, it sounds, oh, it's answering my questions. It's got this knowledge. But so is it really smart? Is it really alive? I don't know. And so that's those two things. Until it has a spark, or until we can prove the specific explanation that it's not just something like that, providing a statistical probability as a result. I'm of the camp that this is just a really great tool.
A great tool. So for now, that's how we treat it. Although that's how I treat it. It's funny that some of my assistants, they're like, when they do prompt engineering, they always say, please.
Please and thank you. I saw some meme. It was like the robots were slaughtering humans, and one was like, wait, not that one. It said, please put that one in the bin. Don't slaughter that human.
That's a joke we have in the office because they always do that, and there's no harm in being polite. I'm like, okay, go
Of
ahead.
course.
But yeah, we do harness the power of AI. It's a tool that we use so that we can deliver faster, because a lot of our services, video editing, these are things that yes, AI can do, but then it still needs someone to do the checking and making sure AI is not there yet to be able to just get this. And but it is evolving, because before it couldn't generate those hands, or that it couldn't generate, but with people, they keep on prompting, giving these prompts, and so it's evolving. But for now, we are learning how to best use it as a tool for us. It saves time, extremely valuable, and so that's what our clients get. They get time. It's actually what we're selling.
That's right. You're selling time and freedom and a completed result.
Exactly. For those that, because I do believe for entrepreneurs, it's very important. Time is very important. So if you're an entrepreneur and you don't have an assistant, it'd be like paying yourself this amount to what do the laundry or this email or to schedule this.
That's one of the
Like,
best investments you can make, is just someone to do your cooking, your cleaning, your dishes, your laundry. Because you get all that time back. It's a simple ROI. If I make on average this much per hour, even, and I could pay somebody else this much per hour to do it.
Exactly. So why are you doing the editing when you could be there in front of your clients and talk to them and let us do the video editing for you? Because that's saving you what, 9 hours, 8 hours every day to do that, instead of having to learn how to do this yourself and having to sit there. And I know, because I do video editing as well, in as a mass communication, that was part of the training that I had back then. We had that film before. But anyway, of course, we are now using Premiere Pro and all the tools that's needed for video editing. But it does save you a lot of time, a lot of hours every day that you can use to do your business. So basically, that's really what we're doing.
Are there any skills or behaviors that you believe are important for your staff to improve or develop, considering what's happening in the world?
It's really the attitude because it's quite difficult to find what we're looking for. It's not like other BPOs in the Philippines, especially call centers, wherein they just need to be very good in English and they have a script that they can follow. Because us, it's a bit technical because it's video editing. And of course, being a virtual assistant, you have to learn a lot of different softwares and project management softwares and the industry itself. So we developed this training module for video editors that we call From Zero to Hero. So, because not a lot of schools provide these types of training. In fact, even me from mass communication, I only had this documentary subject course. I also had experimental film course before, but the technicalities of video editing, there wasn't a specific course for that. It really, I'm not sure now. I know in the university I was from, they don't have that yet, but I'm not sure in other universities. But since our business is here in the city, we're trying to reach out to schools to ask if we can even teach their students this skill so that when their students graduate, we actually have some people that we can hire instead of training from scratch. So yeah, it's a skill set that not a lot of people have. And
And what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see your clients or other entrepreneurs making?
one is, for our clients, when they do it themselves, you have to learn a lot because every time, every month, every quarter, there are changes, especially in digital marketing. And you have to keep yourself updated. And if you're focused on that, then you won't be able to focus in the industry, like for example, in real estate, because there's also a lot of ups and downs in the industry that you have to make sure that you're always up to date in those matters. But if your focus is divided because you're also trying to learn how to do graphic design, learn how to do digital marketing, learn how to do video editing while you're also taking videos and you're So it takes up a lot of your time instead of just, yeah. And then because they're not focused enough, they are not up to date enough with the different changes in social media. And so their hashtags could be wrong, or maybe their SEO, their keyword search could be wrong, or things like that. To keep up with one single platform is already a lot. To keep up with all the different platforms, that's extremely time consuming. So that's why we have a team that is dedicated just for that. So that again saves time, then we do it better than they would ever do it. But that's not their focus.
And you're a specialist in it.
Yes, exactly. So we have specialists in it just searching for the right topics that would be the highest in terms of in the search engine. And of course, the keywords that has to be used. And of course, the video itself has to have that keyword. And inside that video, those words should be mentioned. And then in the title, those words should also be aligned. And then in the keywords, those should also be mentioned just to rank higher. Because SEO has a lot of different steps. It's not just one thing that we can learn and implement. It does have a lot of different aspects to it.
I think SEO is trying to help the robots better understand what something is and what it's about. Because then it can try to match and determine how people like it. And then you've got overlaying on top of that the basic principles of marketing: attention, interest, desire, action. So I agree with that 100%. So this has been a great call, Springzeel. You've had a lot of great insights. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about?
I guess they can check my website if they want. Oh
Sure.
yeah, I do want because we are in digital marketing and we do want to also share this with our client, so I'm hoping like that we can do that.
Sure,
And
of course.
so they can check our website. It's oceanclick.biz. We didn't use .com because it's quite expensive. Because
That's fine. That's fine. I sometimes it's like a $10,000 difference between .com dot biz. So people could go check out oceanclick.biz, OceanClick dot biz. You can also look her up on LinkedIn, Spring Zeal Daniel, Spring Zeal Daniel, Daniel. We've got the right one if she's with One Click Virtual Solutions, or just check out oneclick.biz. Spring
And I think,
Seal, yeah.
yeah, and I think if they check SpringZilla, I'm the only one so far in the world. I did Google myself.
That's cool. That's pretty cool. I would Google it just to see now that you made me curious.
It's a whole story in itself. So
Sure.
maybe next time.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for coming and joining us today and sharing your story and your insights with us, knowing you've got your own direct reports, your own businesses to run, your own priorities. Thank you so much for coming and sharing with my audience tonight so we can all do a little bit better.
Thank you so much, Dario. It has been a pleasure being here on the show.